Let's get kinky. You're listening to the Funny Dom Podcast.
Good evening, folks. Welcome to the show. This week we're going to do some more Q&As, of course, and we're going to have a little story time. And we're also going to talk about an event and a drop experience I had recently. Some of you might have been following on the Instagram, so we're going to talk about that a little bit. And of course, we'll get to our continued Outlander reading, which is getting a little spicy now. And we'll also be announcing the winner of the Get Off giveaway, which is an amazing rope kit, collaboration between myself and Club Bound, a Melbourne rope outfit. It's an amazing rope kit with a bag and shears and rope and stickers. It's pretty great, and we're just gonna give it to one of the participants in the Great Get Off. So if you were one of the folks who got yourself a ticket and enjoyed that experience, then you might be about to win a free rope kit that I'll personally send to you. So stay tuned for that as well. Before we announce that winner, let's get to some questions.
I have a kink-friendly sex therapist friend, and she often says that while kink is not therapy, it can be therapeutic. Do you agree? And what do you think are the potentialities and limits of the healing power of kink?
I absolutely do agree. Yes. Kink is not therapy, but it very much can be a therapeutic space. And I have said that same phrase myself to people. It's not therapy, but it can be therapeutic. I think a lot of healing and a lot of self-discovery and integration happens in kink. I think it's a space that involves a lot of vulnerability and a lot of intimacy and connection. And these are things that promote really positive psychological outcomes. So I think when the situation is very healthy and when you're in a good place and ready for it and you're mindful and aware, it absolutely can be hugely therapeutic. So I think the limits of it, it's not really that it has a limited capacity for what it can do therapeutically. I think the potential is massive. I think people are out there who would point to kink and experiences in kink as the big milestones of their healing. But I think the limit is that the potential is for the opposite as well. Like, you're dealing with a lot of raw ingredients and you're dealing with them in a kind of volatile way. Even if you plan and have intention and a trusting situation and partner or partners, things can still go in an unexpected way. So there is a lot of risk there. I think if you intentionally lean into it as a therapeutic practice, I think you've got to do that in a very aware way, knowing that there are a lot of risks involved with what you're doing. I think it is safer to pursue it for what it is and find healing along the way while you're doing other things for actual therapy. So yeah, I think it's fine to see it as therapeutic and as healing. I think anything positive and connected with other people can be therapeutic and healing. You know, if it's done mindfully and it is safe and the connection is paramount, is a big, you know, factor in whatever it is, then I think that's a situation where healing and therapeutic outcomes occur. But it certainly is in kink. Absolutely. If you've experienced that in either direction, let me know. Send me in a message. It'll be great to hear people's stories about what they've gained, you know, in a healing aspect, what they've found therapeutic about kink. I'd love to hear that. So just DM me with those stories. We could talk about them on the show. Thanks for that question.
Hi, sir. My question is, what are some positive changes you've noticed in yourself after you fully embraced your dominant or your caregiver identity? Thank you.
I think comfort is probably the single biggest one. And by comfort, I don't mean in a luxurious way. I mean in a self-acceptance way. The adage that comes to mind is one I use often. I think it comes from performance, but I think it fits here as well. It fits with identity. And it goes, you know, you're always you. You're always doing you. You don't have a choice. You're you. But there's a lot of power in doing you on purpose. And I think that's the big difference when you embrace your identity in any way, and certainly in kink. If you're a dominant or a sub or a switch or, you know, however you identify, you are still behaving in that way in some aspects. And they might be repressed or they might not be being expressed in a healthy way. That's very common. So that's also at play. But also just for you, you're not really confronting it and accepting it and embracing it. And when you do those three things, there is enormous calm and peace. So since doing that for myself, and it's a continuing process. It's not something I've just done and the next day I was like, that's embraced, that's done. I think you do it every day a little bit. But certainly there's a big milestone of acceptance where you just start really feeling that that's what you are. And it's not novel anymore to consider that. It's almost impossible to consider not being, because you're so aware that it's always been true and it was really just you getting in your own way. I think that's a huge, huge corner that you turn. So for me, I'd say it was that calm of embracing and accepting. And there's a lot of self-love in that, I think. So I think that's the really big one. Everything else is kind of practice-based and it shoots off from that self-awareness. You know, you're allowed to grow further and become more you as you do you on purpose. But the biggest one is that calm and that peace.
Hello, sir. So there's a lot of talk about subspace and little space, maybe even like pet space and rope space. And I would love to hear from you more about dom space and also daddy dom space and how the two feel different for you if they do. Like, what's your experience with dom and daddy dom space? Thank you.
Interesting. I haven't thought of them as different things, but yes, they are. And when we talk about dom space, for me at least, I mean, we have to say this is a kind of thing that can vary greatly and can be different from person to person. But from my experience, I feel dom space as a steady hum almost all the time, but certainly a rising kind of energy to a palpable level when I'm doing something that activates it. And that might be a conditioned activity. Like if I'm preparing for a scene, obviously I know that there is play coming up. And if I'm planning and preparing, not just mentally, but physically, then I know that that's happening and my body's going to react. So I do get a dom space feeling from things like that, from planning a scene, sometimes just from doing grounding practices as well. Exercising can give me a level of dom space. There's a calm level of it or range of it, which isn't to do with play or with the dynamic with a sub. It's just about my own energy. So there's that kind of dom space, which is more broad and more of a humming energy. And then there is, yes, more the daddy energy. That certainly feels like a connection kind of dynamic energy. That's about the little or the sub or the baby girl. That's about the partner. And that's activated as a caregiving range of that DOM space. So all the energy of the regular DOM space is there, even the sadistic, territorial, all those energies are there, but there's also the immense urge to protect and to care, you know, and to be attentive, that is also there. So I'd say that the difference is in a kind of a range of the spectrum. It's not a flavor difference. It's more kind of a spectrum with different kind of areas, and they mix together. But yes, I hope that made some kind of sense. I think it's different for everybody, but for me, I think that's how it feels. And that's probably a good point to talk about my experience this weekend. I think that I had some drop because of the very strong elemental level of Daddy Dom space that I experienced. I went to a regular event here in Melbourne with Bunny, and we have been to a larger version of that event before, so we were quite comfortable, and the event was fine. It wasn't the space that we were in at the event, it was what happened afterwards. So we were at the event, and it was a really nice vibe, and we saw a couple of friends, and that was really nice. We had, you know, just a drink. We'd already kind of talked about limits and boundaries, and we talked about how late we wanted to be out, so we were doing everything right. And we had a little fun, and that was great. And we did actually manage to get out of there not too late. And then, because we'd arranged that Bunny would stay over and she would stay in the playroom and sleep in the little bed, and I had already decided to have a onesie laid out, and so it wasn't just straight to home and some play in bed. It was straight to home and play, and really, really, really good, quite powerful and connected dynamic sex that we had. And then she had a shower, and I laid out a onesie for her. And so when she came back from the shower, she got in her onesie, and I read her a story and tucked her in. So there was a lot of, like, daddy dom space, caregiver energy there. And I tucked her in and said goodnight and gave her, you know, a kiss on her head and went to bed. And I found through the night that I was relaxed and very happy and calm, but also very activated because I was still in, like, daddy mode. And, you know, baby was in the other room. And it wasn't that I wanted to go, you know, get her or do anything. I was just very aware that she was there. So I think it was like, you know, I wanted to, like, keep watch, you know? And I think being in that space for most of the night, even though I did get to sleep and I had a good sleep and we had a really nice connected morning, we didn't have any rush or anything that would normally give me an expectation of possible drop. We had a nice morning, a very kind of well-paced. There was no rush. We went and walked around and had some breakfast and went and did a little shopping. So we had, you know, more than a couple of hours. A little bit more play, of course. But it wasn't until later that night, and then I think the next day, that I really realized that drop was coming in. And I think it was because of that very intense daddy dom space that I was in for a long amount of time, and it was very giving and very enjoyed, and there was no short shifting, or there was no, like, big switch or disconnection or anything like that, but it was still a very intense long amount of time to be in that space. And yeah, that's all it takes sometimes, I suppose. Or maybe the not enough sleep maybe might have cured it. But I think that it was that extreme daddy energy that did lead to me feeling some drop. And I hadn't really realized it until I was feeling the urge to go out at night and get into nature and ground. And then once I was doing that, I could feel how different being out felt, like it felt more needed than enjoyed. And I realized, oh, this is drop. And I've been here for hours already. And that's when I actually shared on my stories on Instagram and told everybody that I think I'm feeling this. And it helped to name it and to name it in front of people and to have people see that. And people messaged pretty quickly and started asking if I was okay and if there was anything they could do. And that vulnerability also helped. It was difficult, but it helped because it made me acknowledge that people are concerned because there's a reason to be concerned, because drop, you know, can be hard. So it did help doing that. And within a few hours, I was walked and talked about it a little bit more. And then I did more exercise back at home. And that really kind of helped me basically climb out of what could have been, I think, a deeper drop. So I managed to kind of level out. And I think most of today has been kind of fully in recovery. And I think now I'm in a kind of leveled out 99% type place. So that might have been one of my longer experiences of drop, because it really was kind of a day and a half. Yeah. Thanks to everybody who did message, by the way. And if you're hearing this and you need to know more about drop, then yeah, ask me a question. Send me more questions. We'll talk about it more here on the show. If you're a Dom and you didn't know that Dom drop was a thing, it is. If you're a sub who didn't know Dom drop was a thing, it is. We all need aftercare. We all need connection. We all need to be mindful, because I was and we were, and it still happened, because that can happen too. So you've just got to be aware it's real and communicate, tell your partners, you know, talk about it and be prepared to look after yourself and to look after your partner. One of the things I did do, which again was a vulnerable thing, which wasn't easy, was I messaged Bunny and just said, can I have a little nighttime message, you know, and just a little bit of reassurance. And she, of course, did. And she sent it, was very, very sweet and dynamic. And it really had a big effect on me, because you do have a hypersensitivity when you're in drop. So something kind of connected and with feeling in it can also have a very big effect in a very positive way. So yes, ask for what you need and be aware and be ready to care.
To support this space and to get access to TFD's exclusive guides to kink, spicy content and more, check out his Patreon at www.patreon.com/thefunnydom.
Got some more questions here from this week's Q&A. What about your life let you know you would want to be a DD? Was there any experimenting first? Or was there experimenting first? There certainly was experimenting. I think if you have this in your identity, then again, you can't help it. You do you. What about your life let you know you would want to be a DD? It's more what in your life lets you know that you are than you would want to be. I think that's still a big understanding that a lot of people don't fully comprehend. It's not something you choose. I really see these things as part of our identity, so it's not a choice. The choice is to grow into it and to become aware of it and to try to be better at it, which is a responsibility. But the core being is there. The core identity is there. So I think I just became more accepting of things that I was interested in exploring. And then once I was really feeling how satisfying they were and that I couldn't really imagine not continuing, I think I began to fully embrace that I was a Dom. And then after that, it immediately followed what kind of Dom I was. And then after that, it followed how to combine the sadistic side and the caregiver side. So it's a little bit of like a journey in a journey. I think if you're looking for signs of what you are, I think asking the question is the biggest sign. If you're trying to figure out, you know, if you're a Dom and what the things were that I noticed about myself, I would say there's a good chance you are, because you're trying to figure it out, and you wouldn't be trying to figure it out if you weren't. You might not be, but I just feel like when you get stuck on this kind of question, it's usually because you just are, and you just haven't, you know, accepted it. And you might just have a bit of imposter syndrome, or you feel like you're missing something. But really it is about kind of embracing it. You know, it's not about passing some kind of, some kind of test, or looking for some kind of barcode, or, you know, something. It's really just kind of looking into yourself and then just going, yep, that's me. And then taking on the responsibility of, well, if that's me, what do I need to do? You know, how can I be better so that I can be good at this part of me? How can I actualize it in a good way and use it to grow, you know? So that might be your next step. Hello, sir. My Dom says he's uncomfortable with aftercare. While I feel blue after most scenes, I feel like self-aftercare is not enough. Would you consider this a too big incompatibility? Thanks. I'm not sure I'd even consider it an incompatibility. I might consider this a fucking worry, to be honest, a real concern. Let me just read that again. Dom says he's uncomfortable with aftercare. I'd be worried. Why? Why is he uncomfortable with aftercare? That sounds like an intimacy issue. Now, you can have different kinds of aftercare. There might be a version for him that is more comfortable, but I don't know, being just broadly uncomfortable with caregiving makes me worried. But that's also because I'm obviously coming from my side, which is being a caregiver. So to me, I wouldn't want any sub I know or any partner anywhere near a Dom who didn't love aftercare. I would say, to be fair and just be the most open to there not being a red flag here, I would say that he is incompatible. I would say that's the minimum. I would also just suggest that you talk about this more with him as to why he's uncomfortable with aftercare. Certainly self-aftercare is not enough, you're right. After a connected experience with someone else, you really need that connection to continue into care. You will be doing self-aftercare after you have connected care. That continues, that's something you need to do as well, but to immediately go from the connected experience into just self-care only feels like a recipe for drop, because that's a bit of a shock to the system and could bring up really anything. You need to talk to him about why he's uncomfortable, what version of aftercare might be comfortable for him. If none, if he doesn't want to do care, even if he has a reason, so some people it's a social intimacy reason that isn't necessarily dysfunctional, it's just a preference that may be okay, but it's certainly going to be incompatible if you're not that way. So I don't think that's going to work. I think that's too dangerous for you. You're going to be inviting drop after every play or every experience. So yes, you should definitely consider something changing, or changing that relationship for your own well-being. My D fulfills all my needs, but I still want to be poly/open. But he is strictly against it, and I don't know what to do. I keep having this desire to cheat, but I really love him and never would. A little frowny face. Well, whether you would cheat or not, you already are cheating yourself. You say all your needs are fulfilled, which is great, you still want to be poly open, well, that's because you're poly or you're open. If he is strictly against it, this is all wrong. The way you're framing this and seeing this is just you guys had done a bad job of connecting and communicating. He can't be against what you are. So being poly or open is not, I don't think it is an identity. It is a choice, but it is a choice of how to be. You know, if you choose to be vegan, then your partner can't be against it. They can just choose what they want to do. So you've chosen to be poly or open because that's what you need to do. Whether you like it or not, that's what you have chosen. That's what you need. He isn't that way, which is totally fine. So this is an incompatibility, and you two basically just shouldn't be together. It's that simple. You know, I don't know if you're going to call that some tough love answering, but it's pretty simple. That's a massive issue. Just because you're compatible dynamically doesn't mean you're compatible as people or as a relationship style. So if you're open, poly, and he's monogamous, guess what? That's not really going to work. If you want to choose to stay together despite that, then you have to negotiate that. And really, it needs him to allow you to be what you are. So you allow him to be monogamous. He needs to allow you to be poly or open in, you know, at least some kind of negotiated way. You might be able to have boundaries and you know, pace it slowly, but he doesn't get to just be against it. He gets to have his own boundaries, which might be if you need to be poly or open, he can't be with you. That's totally okay. I mean, that's his choice. So you say you really love him. I'm going to guess that he also loves you, which means you're going to have to work on this and figure out a way to compromise. And this is a difficult thing to compromise. From the sounds of it, him being strictly against it, I think he's just going to have to snap out of it a little bit and grow up and be more open to your being open, you know. I think that's the healthiest way forward, because the other way to go is for you to not do what you need to do, and that's going to be repressing a need or a way that you want to be. And as you say, you know, you wouldn't cheat, but you're bringing up cheating. Because you know that that's a thing that could happen, because it's a repressed desire. It's not healthy. I think it's much more healthy for him to try and be open to you being open and him being monogamous and figuring out that, you know, that way of being together, than it is him trying to control you or repress you and you putting up with that and tolerating that because you love him. Like, that's just a recipe for dysfunction. And frankly, it sounds like some real vanilla shit. So try and do better than that for yourself and for this relationship. And one more from the Q&A. How does one get through an ending with your first ever daddy? The attachment to the routines, daily conversation, support, connection unlike any other is unreal. And the ending of that is unlike any other heartbreak. It's well put. Unfortunately, there is no special way to get through this. This is the ending of a relationship. Like any other, it's going to take time. If this was your first dynamic connection, as you say, and it was to a daddy dom, so you're potentially a little, or at least on that spectrum, and you had structure and routines and support, it's going to be really difficult. This was your first time. The first dynamic ending is always particularly hard because you haven't got the practice and experience of getting through it. So it feels catastrophic. And it's going to feel that way for a while. There's just no way around that. You're going to have to feel it and get through it. The only advice I can give you is that many people have been where you are, myself included. You will get through this. You will be okay. You need to trust that And at the same time, you need to feel all the grief and the sadness that you do feel so that you can get through this in a way that allows you to process these feelings. You don't want to push them away. You don't want to deny them and repress them and get on with your life, because that will just store them away for later. You want to acknowledge them and give them the time and space that they want, and feel them and be sad and grieve. And you need to do that for however long it's going to take, weeks or months. Now, if this was your first dynamic, I'm going to guess that you may not have been prepared for this, as most people, I think, are not. What you can do now is see that and try and learn from it and try and be more prepared next time. If you have a good connection to your own identity first, if you have those structures in place, or at least some experience in practicing them, then when you get to this point, because you might be here again, relationships end. It's just the reality. You don't want to feel completely lost like you may feel right now again. So what you need to do is you need to lean into setting up your own routines and your own structures. You need to give yourself care. You need to invest in yourself. I would say self-coloring is a pursuit you should take up once you feel that you're on the other side of the worst of this grief. Finding your own identity and connecting to it and taking ownership of it before you seriously connect to another may help you feel more grounded in future in this kind of situation. But for right now, what you're feeling is completely valid and real. You need to feel it all and know that you're not alone. Many people have been there. I regularly get messages from people in your situation. It is difficult, but you're going to be okay. It will pass, and you will connect to another person. But the first person you need to connect to dynamically is yourself. So start looking towards that, your own self, solo submission practices that will help in the near future. For now, just self-care and feel your feelings. And if you have some friends who understand, then I hope you are connecting with them and getting support. If you don't, that can really help. You know, people who are not in the community aren't going to really understand. And this is another thing you need before you have a relationship like this that can or will end at some point. You need support. You need connection. So I hope you have some friends. If not, if you're up to it, try and connect with some. You will easily find people who have had a similar experience, and that can help a lot to validate your feelings and make you feel less isolated. If that is difficult, then you have this space. We're all here. And connect with us. And now, folks, I would like to play for you a wonderful little story that was written and recorded by one of my very special subscribers. It is a beautiful little fairy tale that she has drawn from her own experience, and it's been told and written beautifully. She sent it to me, and I asked if I could record it and share it with you, and I think you're going to love it. So here is The Little Paddle by Juju.
The Story of the Little Paddle. There once was a little paddle who had loads of friends. The little paddle was so happy hanging on a pretty wall surrounded by all its interesting and diverse friends. There was Mr. Flogger, who was big and black and soft, and the little paddle liked him a lot. Then there was Mrs. Whip, who was strong and beautiful and stylish and sexy, and she brought all her smaller whip friends in all the colors of the rain. And there was also Mr. Kane, sleek and strict and elegant. The little paddle loved them all and was very content. But there was one person it loved the most. The little paddle belonged to a little girl. She was beautiful and very clever. The little paddle adored her very much. Each of the friends brought a different sound out of the little girl. Some were moans, others screams or cries. And the little paddle thought all the sounds were so great. But in secret, the little paddle loved the noises the little girl made with the paddle the most. Then someday, something bad happened. The little girl's boyfriend came into the room and took away all the little paddle's friends. And they never came back. So the little paddle was hanging on that big empty wall all alone, between the nails that once held all its friends, but were now empty. And the little paddle was very sad and cried every day. Even the little girl never came to visit anymore. It was so lonely hanging there all by itself for over a year, wondering if it will ever have friends again. And then one day, after all the suffering, something amazing happened. The little girl came into the room and touched the little paddle. And she was talking to it, telling it the most beautiful things, like how much she loved the little paddle, how much she had missed it, and how important the little paddle was to her. And then the little girl took the little paddle off its lonely wall and brought it to her bed and used it. And she made the most wonderful sounds. The little paddle was over the moon. After, they snuggled up together in bed and fell asleep and dreamt of always staying together and all the awesome adventures they are going to experience together. The next day, the little girl went out and got new friends for the little paddle, and the air was once again filled with moans and whimpers and laughter and joy, and they all lived happily ever after. And what do we learn from the story of the little paddle? Little girls are never dependent on someone else for their toys and moans. We are strong and intelligent and beautiful, and we can have all the fun in the world without depending on someone else.
Wasn't that a beautiful story? I hope you enjoyed that. Thank you, Juju, for that story. I think it will touch and resonate with many people out there. Now it's time to announce the winner of our giveaway. For those of you who took part in the great get-off, we have a fantastic prize to give away. And I have it right here, actually. It is a bag of goodies. It's a rope bag with the logo for Club Bound, who has given us a lot of the goodies. And it's got my new logo on the other side. And inside, we have a beautiful red satin blindfold. We have a wrapped hank of preconditioned jute rope. Brand new from Club Bound, beautiful. We've got some stickers in there. We've got a little baby hank of rope, a little extra. And of course, we have a pair of safety shears, which you have to have when you're starting out in your rope practice. There's even a little sample tub of rope balm from Club Bound thrown in as well. So all these things you get just for taking part in the very first Get Off, which will come back each Valentine's Day. So if you didn't take part this year, then come along next year. Get some great music to play to and even a session guide if you're playing solo, and you might win a great prize. We'll see if we can give away a great prize every year, because that'll be fun. So the very first winner taking part in the Get Off is Samira from Germany. That's right, all the way from Germany. I'm going to be sending this little bag of goodies all the way to Deutschland, and I hope you have a lot of fun tying and playing with the blindfold, and I hope the stickers, they're kinky stickers, so I hope they go somewhere fun. So congratulations, and thank you so much for taking part in that very first event. It was a big, fun experiment, but the feedback was quite beautiful. So we're going to do that every single year.
To support this space and to get access to TFD's exclusive guides to kink, spicy content, and more, check out his Patreon at www.patreon.com/thefunnydom.
Hello, sir. Could you tell Little to go to bed, please? And that it's bedtime, and good night. So that anyone who wants to can listen to it over and over and over again. Thank you.
What time is it? Mm-hmm. Quite late. Certainly past your bedtime, isn't it? Time for your bed. Come on. Have you brushed? If you haven't brushed, go brush. Do your bedtime routine. Get in your pajamas. And you get straight to bed. Right now. Don't you give me that look. I said get ready for bed right now. You be good. You need your rest. You do as I say. There you go. Into bed, get nice and cozy. Say good night, sir. Good night, sweet dream.
You're listening to the Funny Dom podcast.
And of course, we're not done yet. That was just to put some of those littles to bed who are up their bedtime. We still have our weekly reading of Diana Gabaldon's Outlander to get to. So, for those of you who have been waiting, here we go. We're going to Outland. So, if you're reading along, grab your books. In my copy, we're up to page 61. It is chapter 3, however, whatever page that is in your copy. We're up to Chapter 3, The Man in the Wood. I've got my hot cup of tea here. Chapter 3, The Man in the Wood. The men were some distance away when I saw them. Two or three, dressed in kilts, running like the dickens across a small clearing. There was a far-off banging noise that I rather dazedly identified as gunshots. I was quite sure I was still hallucinating when the sound of shots was followed by the appearance of 5 or 6 men dressed in red coats and knee breeches, waving muskets. I blinked and stared. I moved my hand before my face and held up 2 fingers. I saw 2 fingers, all present and correct. No blurring of vision. I sniffed the air cautiously. The pungent odour of trees in spring and a faint whiff of clover from a clump near my feet. No olfactory delusions. I felt my head. No soreness anywhere. Concussion, unlikely then. Pulse a little fast, but steady. The sound of distant yelling changed abruptly. There was a thunder of hooves, and several ponies came charging in my direction. Kilted Scots atop them, yodeling in Gaelic. I dodged out of the way with an agility that seemed to prove I had not been physically damaged, whatever my mental state. And then it came to me, as one of the redcoats, knocked flat by a fleeing Scot, rose and shook his fist theatrically after the ponies. Of course, a film. I shook my head at my own slowness. They were shooting a costume drama of some sort, that was all. One of those Bonnie Prince in the Heather sorts of things, no doubt. Well, regardless of artistic merit, the film crew wouldn't thank me for introducing a note of historic inauthenticity into their shots. I doubled back into the wood, meaning to make a wide circle around the clearing and come out the road where I had left the bike. The going was more difficult than I had expected, though. The wood was a young one, and dense with underbrush that snagged my clothes. I had to go carefully through the spindly saplings, disentangling my skirts from the brambles as I went. Had he been a snake, I would have stepped on him. He stood so quietly among the saplings as almost to have been at one of them, and I did not see him until a hand shot out and gripped me by the arm. Its companion clapped over my mouth as I was dragged backwards into a grove, thrashing wildly in panic. My captor, whoever he was, seemed not much taller than I, but rather noticeably strong in the forearms. I smelled a faint flowery scent, as of lavender water, and something more spicy, mingled with the sharper reek of male perspiration. As the leaves whipped back into place in the path of our passage, though, I noticed something familiar about the hand and forearm clasped about my waist. I shook my head free of the restraint over my mouth. "Frank," I burst out, "what in heaven's name are you playing at?" I was torn between relief at finding him here and irritation at the horseplay. Unsettled as I was by my experience among the stones, I was in no mood for rough games. That's a pity. The hand released me, but even as I turned to him, I sensed something wrong. It was not only the unfamiliar cologne, but something more subtle. I stood stock still, feeling the hair prickle on my neck. "You aren't Frank," I whispered. "I am not," he agreed, surveying me with considerable interest. "Though I've a cousin of that name. I doubt, though, that it's he you have me confused me with, madame. We do not resemble one another greatly." Whatever this man's cousin looked like, the man himself might have been Frank's brother. There was the same lithe, spare build and fine-drawn bones, the same chiselled lines of the face, the level brows and the wide hazel eyes, and the same dark hair, curved, smooth across the brow. But this man's hair was long, tied back from his face with a leather thong. Tied in the hair. And the gypsy's skin showed the deep, baked tan of months, no years of exposure to the weather. Not the light golden colour Frank's had attained during our Scottish holiday. "Just who are you?" I demanded, feeling most uneasy. While Frank had numerous relatives and connections, I thought I knew all the British branch of the family. Certainly, there was no one who looked like this man among them, and surely Frank would have mentioned any near relative living in the Highlands. Not only mentioned him, but insisted upon visiting him as well, armed with the usual collection of genealogical charts and notebooks, eager for any tidbits of family history about the famous Black Jack Randall. The stranger raised his brows at my question. "Who am I?" I might ask the same question, madame, and with considerably more justification. His eyes raked me slowly from head to toe, travelling with a sort of insolent appreciation over the thin, sprigged cotton dress I wore, and lingering with an odd look of amusement on my legs. I did not at all understand the look, but it made me extremely nervous, and I backed up a step or two, until I was brought up sharp by bumping into a tree. The man finally removed his gaze and turned aside. It was as though he had taken a constraining hand off me, and I let out my breath in relief, not realizing until then I had been holding it. He had turned to pick up his coat, thrown across the lowest branch of a sapling. He brushed some scattered leaves from it and began to put it on. I must have gasped, because he looked up again. The coat was deep scarlet, long-tailed and without lapels, frogged down on the front. The buff linings of the turned back cuffs extended a good 6 inches up the sleeve, and a small coil of gold braid gleamed from one epaulet. It was a dragoon's coat, an officer's coat. Then it occurred to me, of course, he was an actor, from the company I'd seen on the other side of the wood. Though the sword he proceeded to strap on seemed remarkably more realistic than any prop I had ever seen. I presented myself against the bark of the tree behind me, and found it reassuringly solid. I crossed my arms protectively in front of me. "Who the bloody hell are you?" I demanded again. The question this time came out in a croak that sounded frightened even to my ears. As though not hearing me, he ignored the question, taking his time in the fastening of the frogs down the front of his coat. Only when he finished did he turn his attention to me once more. He bowed sardonically, hand over his heart. "I am, Madame, Jonathan Randall Esquire, Captain of His Majesty's 8th Dragoons, at your service, Madame." I broke and ran, my breath rasped in my chest as I tore through the screen of alder, ignoring brambles, nettles, stones, fallen logs, everything in my path. I heard a shout behind me, but was much too panicked to determine its direction. I fled blindly, branches scratching my face and arms, ankles turning as I stepped in holes and stumbled on rocks. I had no room in my mind for any form of rational thought. I wanted only to get away from him. And unfortunately, we'll have to leave it there this week. Just a short reading of Outlander, because we had a very long episode and lots going on. So wrap it up there. We'll pick it up next week. I have a bad feeling about this captain character. So interested to see what happens there. I hope you enjoyed listening and reading along and enjoyed the show. Be good. Stay kinky, as if you had any choice in the matter. See you next time.
To support this space and to get access to TFD's exclusive guides to kink, spicy content and more, check out his Patreon at www.patreon.com/thefunnydom.